Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Keep that music in the background going, Mukundi, because I want to talk to just for a few minutes, because I want to ask the professor that question. What does he think? Professor Bill Kolbrenner, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good morning, Howard. I'm great. Listen, I'll be. The first thing I want to say is that the taste of a good cup of coffee on a Friday morning, it's always the same and it's always great. And feeling less optimistic, I mean, Howard, what's the obvious answer? Anti-Semitism, you know? I mean, we thought for a while, and I'm sorry, I'm not a political commentator, you know, so you can erase this, but, you know, we thought for a while in America that anti-Semitism had a certain kind of political party and that it was just like one party. It's a kind of charmingly naive, those people who thought that, you know, God was a Republican and a Republican people love Jews. It turns out, Howard, that, you know, we nudgy liberals, I mean, sorry to use that term still, we were right. I mean, it's not just the left who are anti-Semites. It's the world, and we're waking up to that every single morning. And
so that's your, as much as things change, they stay the same.
Indeed.
Okay, so, right, nothing cheerful from you then this morning.
I did say something about the coffee, Howard.
You did. Fair enough. No FIFA World Cup spirit from Professor Bill Kolbrenner. So let's talk about the subject that we wanted to discuss, which is the isolation of Israelis, Israeli culture, it's all sorts of things, actually, because my concern around this is it's not just happening where we can see it. It's happening more where we can't see it. So some of the battles are being fought and even won in public, but it does send messages to other people to say, if we need a speaker, if we need an artist, it's not worth going the Israel route. Let's just go another route. And they're not even realizing what they're doing, but slowly what that does is removes Israelis from society.
Well, that's, I think, the terrifying part about the success of things like the BDS movement, the anti-Israel movement, the anti-Zionism movement. The successes are not measured by the people who come to their rallies. Mm. The successes are measured, as you're saying, by the people who are getting that message, not subliminally, but are getting it just through the airwaves. And as you said, it becomes a reflex of just avoidance. And that kind of isolationism, listen, the New York Times gleefully wrote it in an article. It tried to be a little bit, objective, as it were, about that Israelis were no longer bells at the cultural ball. And they found a bunch of Israelis who, of course, have been ostracized, who haven't been included in regular conversations, who are being boycotted, who are being censored. And again, there's a little bit of glee in the New York Times. Of course, genocide is through the lines, and BBB is through the lines. And the fact is that Israeli artists are struggling to speak to audiences that read the New York Times. I mean, I think, Howard, you know, this, I think, is very close to both of what we do. I mean, you're, of course, this international radio host. I'm a publisher of Balagan, a magazine, and Writing on the Wall. We're trying to find a place for complexity, for voices that show who we are, not in a monolithic way, who refuse the narratives that want to put us into this box, this box, this box, this box. And I think that's the direction, especially by the way the world is going today in terms of what can be published, where, and AI. We are providing these genuine voices that need to be heard. It will not happen in the New York Times. And I think Israelis, the people who publish in my magazine, the people who come onto your show, they know the New York Times is no longer the place, and it was for half a century, is no longer the place where Jews are going to find their voices. And that gives people like us a tremendous responsibility to show that complexity, to show that we're not monolithic, and also to show that, you know, for all what the New York Times is, we will create our own community. We will create our own conversations. Thank you very much. And we don't want to be the bell of that ball anymore, because at the bell of that ball, they're not only serving pork and bacon and all this stuff that we can't eat, but their menu is a menu of anti-Semitism. And I think we are facing up, and this is an inflection point, I think, for us culturally. We have to go out there and do it ourselves. You know, Howard, after the fall, I mean, I hate to be grandiose, but let's for a moment be grandiose. When the Second Temple fell in Jerusalem, What followed that was the greatest time of creativity in Jewish history, the flowering of the Jewish oral law,
That's interesting.
the Talmud, the birth of Jewish, I won't even say Jewish culture, I'll say Jewish cultures. And that's what we're doing now, Howard. You know, we may not see it now, but we are sitting, I mean, among the ruins. Thankfully, I'm sitting, you know, very close to Jerusalem in my house, and there's no ruins here now, thank God. With that said, we are sitting among the cultural ruins, and the New York Times will not rescue us. And the people who read the paper and think, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, they're looking in the wrong direction, and they should be tuning into you. I say this to all my friends, Howard, and they should be reading Balagan and writing on the wall, because we are not only showcasing voices, we are creating conversations.
So what's interesting is, and I shared it with you, but I haven't actually shared it with listeners, and I don't want to use the name of either the author or the publisher, but we had an experience towards the end of last week, and the reason I haven't spoken about it is because I've given the publishers a time to respond, which they have not done adequately. But we had a situation here at Chai last week where one of our producers got an email that said as follows: "I hope you're well. Please accept so-and-so's withdrawal from an interview on Chai FM. The professor understands that his book is perfect for discussion because, in fact, it was about the historical value of the history of June the 16th. This is what the discussion was about. However, he is not comfortable to engage on the platform. Please accept this late notice." And we went. I wrote a very, very respectful email to the CEO of this professor's publishing house, and I said, "Look, this is what happened. I'm certainly don't want to jump to any conclusions, but as you will understand, in a time of heightened sensitivity around anti-Semitism, etc., this makes me feel uncomfortable. Please, can you address this?" And I received an immediate response to say, "Oh, yes, it was our mistake. We should have cleared which platform he was prepared to be on before we offered." And that was either missing the point, just for the sake of it, or very deliberately not answering the question. And I went back and I said, "Thank you. I appreciate your quick response. But can you please address the issue of the discomfort around what is, because this platform is one that we offer of, to a very, very broad range of opinions. And certainly, I can't understand why somebody who cares about the historical aspects of South Africa, apartheid, and our youth would have a problem. You do not need to mention the word Jew or Israel in any of those conversations." And there you have it. So it actually works both ways as well. Not only are we often precluded from this type of thing, but in fact, we have we aren't we are even not being used as a platform by some as a result of it. I can tell you that I used to do a tremendous amount of corporate talks, presentations, workshops. Since October the 7th, I have not done one, not one. Now, I'm okay with it because my life is very busy and very fulfilled, but not one since October 7th, and that tells me a whole big, big story.
It's in the 17th century, one of the poets that I study, John Milton, wrote a tract against censorship, but more particularly against pre-publication censorship.
Interesting.
Things were getting censored before they came out. They needed to go to a licensor to get a stamp and imprimatur. But in a way, there's it's parallel to what's happening now. Our voices are not even being, they're not being published, they're not being heard. We're being excluded from conversations, Howard. You know, the mayor of New York talked about how he treasures and cherishes the Jewish people. To me, that just sounds like, you know, Nazis talking about Theresienstadt, the place where artists made, you know, Jewish artists who were in concentration camps, put on productions. We cherish these people. We're becoming, this is dangerous, Howard, the cherished minority. The cherished minority also knows its place very, very clearly. We're being lectured now by the Vice President of the United States. You should be happy. Donald Trump is the only world leader who still likes you. This is a dangerous situation we're in, Howard. And it's not just as you're saying, our voices not being heard, but our voices being, we are now being told who we can be and what we can say. We're being put more and more in a corner. And that's why I think people like you and me, Howard, right? We've changed our venues. But with doing that, we are reaching out to an audience that's much more important than your corporate audience. The people who you're reaching right now with these interviews is much more important because we're creating a conversation in which we can exist, in which we can exist as complex. You know, Shylock says, does a Jew not have eyes? Do we not have mouths? Do we not have perspectives and opinions like everybody else? And your the PR person for that interview, your perspective person said, no, you don't. We're not going to speak to you. We're not going to let you be part of that conversation. You're no longer belle of the ball, Howard. I told you
Oh,
about your outfit.
gosh. Wow. The sad thing is, I'm not even sure I was ever the belle of the ball. But okay, that's something completely different. So what happens now? I mean, the positive in what you're saying is that at a time of exclusion is a time for creativity, and I guess that's absolutely true. Chai FM is thriving, partly because this is a creative space that people are focused on, and also there's a very clear message that other platforms are not for us either because we're not valued there. So we're going to create something really, really special. Does that extend across all spheres, not just cultural and art, but into other spaces?
You know, Howard, I think what we do on the cultural level is just so important. And I quote the poet Shelley all of the time, that poets, and I'm going to include you in that category, Howard, we are the unacknowledged legislators of the world. What does that mean? Do we make the laws? We make the laws insofar as that we provide the language, we provide the words through which people can express themselves. And that's where things start. Let me just schwitz for a little bit. I'm the publisher of Balagan. We just put out our issue called Hope Exhale. We put out our food issue, Erev Yom Kippur. We were going to put out the Hope issue the day the second big Iran war started. We thought, no, we didn't do that. Then we were going to put it out a week ago, but then there was the little tiny mini war. So we decided not to do that. But finally, it's come out. And if you go to our site, Writing on the Wall, and you see there's a piece, for example, by Noga Friedman, who lost her husband in the war. She wrote a graphic novel. Her husband appears as a little skull. The passage that the panel we've excerpted is Choose Your Own Life. And he chose his own life on October the 7th. The pathos of that perspective. We also have a psychotherapist, and she talks about how a kid who was in Gaza with his sister came back, and he said when he came back, I just feel sorry for the people who are still there, the Gazans, because they're still there. And we have from across the board, we have Marina Maximilian, one of the Israel's great artists. She's a great singer. And she writes about how she saw somebody before her eyes come out of a coma while she was singing. To me, you know, that's a metaphor for who we are today. Let's, Howard, we got to sing. We got to say, I'm a nudgy English professor. And one of the things I've decided to do in this part of my life, you know, the transition part of my life, we have to sing and we let other people sing. And singing doesn't mean an aria or an opera. It means sharing our voices, being unashamed about our voices, being unashamed of who we are and what we have to say. And being able, I think also, Howard, I think one of the services that you do is you share you're not screaming like a lot of nonprofits and saying, we didn't say that and we didn't say that and you're lying about this. You're saying on your radio show every day, this is who we are. And don't try to pin us down to one perspective because we can't be. Because
Interesting. Because that's
we've always
exactly,
been,
I think the success of the BDS and the anti-Jewish movements is they've narrowed us down, or they've attempted to narrow us into a space that all we can do is defend. and say, no, these are the facts, these are the facts, these are the facts. But actually what that does in of itself is succeeds, because we stop being artists and sports people and scientists and doctors and writers and all sorts of things. And yeah, that is our goal, is to stretch that open again so that we can showcase exactly what you're doing, is showcasing who we are and who we have the potential, who we have the potential to be. Is there another way, and Mukundi tells me I need to wrap this up, but is there another way to address this? Is there any value in addressing it head on? Or does the fact that, you know, we are the troublesome kid in the family just mean that that perpetuates itself if we continue to push back against this?
So I'll just say what we do is different, Howard. Is, you know, your presence on the radio is indispensable, your voice. But the thing that's great about your voice is you allow the voices of others. You're not a nonprofit with three guys talking on the radio every single day in their perspectives. You let other people speak. And that's our future. That's the Jewish future.
Professor Bill Kohlbrenner, thank you as always. Wishing you a Shabbat Shalom.